You like that? You like that?
Feels great, baby.
It's the moment we've been waiting for since February. It's finally here. Football is back, and we're celebrating with a huge, huge episode of You Like That Feels Great, Baby. I'm Eric Stenholm. That's Joey Moore. We got the picks and predictions for the two most important divisions in the NFL, the NFC North, of course, and the NFC West, of course. We've got two season-long win total best bets. We've got Joey's Jack in the Bum of the Week. We got a Week 1 preview, five You Like That picks of the week, and we've got our picks for who plays for the Lombardi Trophy in February and who gets to hoist it. Let's roll. Let's get right into it, Joey. I know we want to talk about some of the major stuff that happened in the last week, but we got to start with the NFC North preview. We'll save your Niners for last. We'll start with the NFC North. We want to talk about Micah Parsons. We'll do that when we get to Green Bay. Let's start with the Vikes. This is where I'm probably going to differ most from all the picks that we've made, you know, to this point in the six other divisions we previewed in the last few weeks. I was mostly chalk. Like, there was a pick here and there, like Vegas winning eight games, that was like more than a game or two, more than what is expected. But here's where I'm going to differ pretty significantly. Vikings 12-5, number two seed. I know people are going to say it's a homer pick, but I feel like I know my team. Last year I said we'd go 10-7 when we were projected to go 6-11. We went 14-3. This year I think we're two games worse than last year, but I don't think we're five games worse than last year like Vegas is expecting. So many things to say about the Vikes, but Joey, I got to turn it to you first as an unbiased observer, your take on my boys heading into 2025.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, but I think it all hinges on whether or not JJ can replicate what Darnold did for pretty much almost all the season, the whole season last year. I think he can, but again, it's a tough division. I mean, maybe Chicago's no longer the complete joke that they have been recently. But yeah, I mean, they're one of the more well-coached teams in the league. Great skill position, especially the receivers, when one of them's not getting suspended, feels like every year. I mean, their front's good. There's lots of light, tough home field. And yeah, I mean, these division games are going to be critical. That's why the first week in this division, two huge games, both on Sunday and then Monday.
Mm-hmm.
I got to go in 10-7.
I feel like that's respectable. The Vegas over-under was set at 8.5. A lot of people bet it up. It's now at 9.5. I really think that they're going to go over that total pretty comfortably. I think they could start 5-0, and then there's a gauntlet, like a miserable stretch in the middle of the season, you know, with Philly and Detroit and some of these other top teams. And it's like, okay, we might struggle during the middle of the season, but I like our start and I like our finish of the schedule. Just to explain why I have them going 12-5, improved interior offensive line. Will Fries, Ryan Kelly, Donovan Jackson are the new interior offensive line. All three guys who started last year in that dismal Rams playoff game are gone. I love that. I also love the defensive line, interior of the defensive line, massively improved. You know, you look at the reason that I think we struggled in those final 2 weeks of the season, we were just out physicaled. And that's what we spent all of our free agent money and all of our draft capital on this offseason. I think on the D-line with Jonathan Allen and Javon Hargrave and this kid Ingram Dawkins that they got in the draft, like it really does seem like they're going to have, I would say, like a B-minus interior defensive line with an A-minus pass rush with the edge rushers. And then really, to me, the only possible weaknesses on this team are cornerback and quarterback. So it's like, yes, it really is simple, but if McCarthy is a D, we're going to go 6-11. If McCarthy is a B, I think we go like 11-6. God help me, if he's like an A minus, we might go like 13-4, be the one seed. It really does come down to him. I think if he plays up to his capability and the cornerbacks are awful or whatever, I mean, I think we have the either best or second best coaching staff in the NFL in terms of, I think Flores would have been a head coach if he wasn't actively suing the NFL with what he's done the last 2 years. I really believe in this group. I believe in O'Connell. I believe in Flores. I believe in J.J. McCarthy. The limited amount that I've seen, I think there will be growing pains at the beginning, but I think he'll hit his stride once we get to the end of the season. We play Green Bay in Week 18. I think we might have the same record going into that game, and I think that might be, you know, the game that decides the division. Am I being too optimistic? I mean, I you have them at 10-7, so you clearly think they got some things right there. Is what's worrying you mostly the competition in the division and the conference, or is it just straight up McCarthy?
Oh, both him and the, and more specifically the division. I mean, that's six, well, probably four really tough games. And, you know, again, I think they win Monday, but I mean, things just get weird in the first week of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who knows what Ben Johnson throws week one. I mean, he's from the division. So I'm very interested to see what he does against Brian Flores without everything he had in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, McCarthy in the division. I mean, if they win, if they are over 500 in the division and he plays well,
mm-hmm.
yeah, they absolutely could go 11-6, 12-5.
We start with at Chicago, home Atlanta, home Cincinnati, and then Pittsburgh and Cleveland, both in England. I think we could win all five of those. Cincinnati's the only one that really scares me. Here's what keeps me up at night as a Vikings fan is bye week, week six, after two European games, and then versus Philly, at Chargers Thursday night football, at Detroit versus Baltimore, then versus Chicago, and then at Green Bay, at Seattle. You finish really easy with, you know, Dallas and the Giants, and I think Detroit and Green Bay at home. We usually handle them at home. I don't know. I look at this team and I say the coaching infrastructure is so good. It really just comes down to McCarthy and the corners. And I mean, we're hoping that guys like Isaiah Rogers and Jeff Okuda are able to play B-minus at the corner position. And I think with how good our defensive line and pass rush are, I think we can get that out of them. I think it's going to be a top five defense. I think it's going to be a top 12 to 15 offense, given that we have one of the five best play callers in the NFL. I believe in this unit. I think we're going 12-5. I think we're winning the division. I think we're going to be the two seed. I'll put it on record, and I know I'll probably get criticized for it. And man, that might blow up in my face because I've never predicted them to have that good of a record before. But I'm going with it. Here is where we differ, and we really want to talk about the Green Bay Packers because of Micah Parsons, but I want to talk about, I have Green Bay as the five seed, tying the Vikings at 12-5 and losing on the tiebreaker in that Week 18 game in Minnesota. You have Green Bay with a significantly worse record, and I give you the floor.
Yeah, I might be, I mean, I'm just not on this whole Packers parade right now after the trade for Micah Parsons. He's a great player. I just don't know. That you can't tell me that this doesn't do something to the team. Number one, I don't think they're as good. I don't think they're as good as they think they are, or most people think they are before the trade.
Before the trade, there was all this hype, like people saying, are they the second best team in the NFC after the Eagles? And I was like, whoa.
I mean, what did they barely make the playoff? They were the seventh seed, play Philly, right?
Yeah, got absolutely mollywopped in that game.
Yeah, I mean, yes, I really like Matt LaFleur. I think he's a really good coach, especially obviously offensively. I mean, he won games last year with Malik Willis. I like Jordan Love. I don't love him by any stretch. I like him. I think the receivers, they have a lot of decent receivers. They keep telling that they got this young call. None of them to me are a one, which makes sense why they took Golden in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who's to say what he does? They paid Aaron Banks a lot of money too, to play left guard.
A guy that you weren't exactly smitten with the last couple of years.
Yeah, defensively, I like him, but I don't love him. And for some reason, they seem injury prone to me, especially the receiver always hurt. I think Romeo Doubs has like chronic concussions.
Of these podcasts I listen to say that they are one of the only teams in recent NFL history where everybody on the team is like a B or B minus. Like, there are no bad players that are going to start for this team. There's also no elite ones until Micah Parsons came in, and some people don't think he's as elite as they say he is. So they're like, they're fading Green Bay on the fact that they don't really have any elite talent. Like, unless Golden has a career year as a rookie, or unless Parsons really does break out despite his back injury, everybody looks at them and says it's a bunch of B minuses, B pluses, Bs. I kind of agree. I just think that in this division, you'd rather have that than some of these other rosters, which we'll get into in a minute. But 8-9, man.
I got them going 8-9. You know what, like, really got me is, like, I heard Micah Parsons, he's the first guy since Curly Lambeau to wear number one for the Green Bay Packers. Like, I'm like, you haven't been there a week. It's just, you know, like, and again, no one's going to come out and say it. No one wants to put their name on it. But they don't even think about doing this trade, Dallas, I think, if players didn't want him gone.
Right.
Like, teammates were just kind of tired of something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anything, like, he's a bad guy. Like, he's clearly never about any trouble, like, off the field, which is, like, even worse. It's like a lot of teams, everyone makes jokes about, like, you go out there and, like, beat your wife or murder a guy, like, just don't be late to a meeting. That's when we really get pissed off. And it's just like, that's the kind of, like, and, you know, like, you can't tell me, like, him, like, Monday, he's doing a podcast. Like, if they lose 41-7, that, like, he's doing his. Brady didn't do this. Brady's a media guy now. He didn't do all he was planning. I think it's.
There's a lot of little things.
That's, and, like, you go to a new team, like they don't love you. Like, I mean, I think fans are like, oh, the team's psyched to get Parsons. I'm like, sure they are. But, like, he's got no equity with the Packers.
Sure.
None. And if he doesn't show it immediately, and if his back injury lingers, yeah. And Kenny Clark's a good player. I know he had kind of a down year, I read, but good player.
He'll help with their run defense. I get the move from Jerry, and we'll talk about it a little bit more later, getting two ones and a run stuffer for a guy who, I mean, commanded a over $185 million deal over 4 years, makes him the highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history. You're a little down on the move. You're a little down on the Packers. I just think that there's going to be attrition elsewhere in the division, which is why I have them winning so many games. I think if you look at their schedule, it breaks kindly for them at the end of the year, and I think they can go on a little run. A lot of people have been saying that Love was hurt basically all of last year. If you look at his 2023, where he ended up losing to the Niners in the playoffs, they almost won that game. And I thought, you know, I mean, he struggled in that game. But.
Oh, they should have won.
Yeah.
They already went to Dallas. And they should have beat the Niners. I mean, they really should have.
Right. And he was excellent in 2023. And that infuriated me because it was, you know, you're like, okay, Rodgers was the guy for 15 years. Favre was the guy for 15 years. Now they got Jordan Love, and they're going to suck. And then he was great. He led the league in touchdown passes. He almost made the NFC Championship game in his first year as a starter. And I'm like, here we go again. He regressed pretty significantly last year, but everybody was saying that he was hurt the entire year. So I kind of believe that based on some of the film I watched. Like, when he played the Vikings in Week 17, it was, I mean, he was awful in the first half of that game. Like, truly awful. And then it comes out after the season that he probably needed a procedure that he didn't get. We're going to find out who the real Jordan Love is this year. I think he's good. I think he's probably somewhere in that 10 to 14 range of NFL quarterbacks. At his best, he could probably sneak into the top 10 with his arm talent. But I would not be the least bit surprised if they finish with a losing record. Like you said, this Parsons thing has the ability to blow up. Now, the reason I have them going 12-5 is because I think the other two teams in this division, one of them is overhyped and one of them is about to collapse. And we disagree on this majorly. I have Detroit falling to 9-8, and you have them winning the division, and we'll get to that in a minute. But I want to outline why I have them falling to 9-8 from 15-2, a 6-game drop. If you look at all the teams in recent NFL history that lost both coordinators in one offseason, it is not good. You're talking 2023 Eagles, who were one of the most disappointing teams in recent NFL history. They lost their last six and were very close to firing Sirianni. You look at the Patriots, I believe it was in 04 when they lost both Weiss and Cornell. They missed the playoffs with prime Tom Brady in 2005. You had this with several teams that contended in the late 2000s, early 2010s. It's an average drop-off of 4.5 wins for a team that loses both coordinators to head coaching hires in the same offseason. So that would put them at 10.5, and that's exactly where Vegas has them. I just think we haven't seen Goff without McVay or Ben Johnson since the Jeff Fisher era. We kind of saw it that season where they went 3-13, where Ben Johnson really didn't have any tools to work with. I just think this isn't a perfect situation for Goff anymore. He lost two of his key offensive linemen. He lost his play caller. He lost his quarterback's coach. I think that defense was a B- at best last year. Yes, Hutchinson is back, but I mean, that defense really sucked for the middle of the season and then got absolutely crushed by Washington in the playoffs. I don't believe in this team. I think there is going to be a significant drop-off this year. I'm not saying they missed the playoffs. I have them actually as the 7th seed at 9-8 in the NFC, but this is another one where I'm willing to stake my reputation on it. Teams that lose both coordinators and two elite offensive linemen in the same offseason, I don't like that. Joe, you have them winning the division. Make the case.
Well, I do have them coming off a drop-off, but they were 15-2 last year. I mean, it's like they're and kind of opposite of the Packers. Like they have more probably C, D players, but they have way more A players.
Right.
And, you know,
where do you put Goff?
Getting one of them back with Hutchinson. Mm. I mean, last year he was on his way to being defensive player of the year.
Yeah.
Before his leg snapped. Who's to say he's the same player? Hope he is. Don't like anyone just getting wrecked because of that. But yeah, he's going to make huge difference defensively. Still one of the best offensive lines of football. Penei Sewell's going to be an all pro for what seems like 10 plus years. Amon-Ra St. Brown, same thing. Jameson Williams, love the running back. I mean, and like, yeah, I'm a Jared Goff guy. As much as I have not, I'm not like super in love with Jordan Love. I mean, Jared Goff, yes, with McVay for the most part, and definitely in Detroit, he's been damn good, damn good. If there's not much of a drop off with new coordinators, new coaches, I mean they're gonna be good. They're still gonna have an offense that score 30 plus points a game, and that's just tough to beat.
I agree that the offense is still going to put up points. I don't know if they're going to put up points the way that they did. I don't know if Dan Campbell's going to have the confidence the way he did to go for it on 4th-and-2, 4th-and-3, 4th-and-4 the way he did the last few years when he knows he's got the best offensive line in the NFL, or the second best after the Eagles. They lost Glasgow. They lost Ragnow. They were the 30th-ranked passing defense last year and got torched in the playoffs. I really think the whole
that.
What'd you say?
Said Hutchinson will help that.
It'll certainly help that. I just, something about this team just kind of feels off to me. I really do think, I think they probably start with a loss at Green Bay. There's a chance that they you know, win that game close and then here we go again. But I really think if you look at their early season schedule, like they lose to Green Bay, all of a sudden you're like, oh, wait a minute here. Like this could really spiral. It all basically comes down to, do you think Dan Campbell can do this with any coordinators? And I don't think he's a Kyle Shanahan level, Bill Belichick level, you know, other best coaches in the league, Andy Reid level. I don't think he's in that discussion or even close yet. I think he's a guy who, in a way, was kind of propped up by his coordinators. Obviously, he's like a top two motivator in the NFL. Like, he's an excellent rah-rah guy. I think he knows how to coach football. The question is, can he be a Harbaugh? Can he be a Tomlin? Or is he going to be one of those guys who, hey, he had those good teams in the mid-2020s with the Lions, and then they fell off? Like, I think he's a little bit closer to that middle tier of coaches without Ben Johnson there, without, you know, Aaron Glenn there, without, I would say, the best offensive line in football, which was assembled, oddly enough, by the GM who was there before he was. So I'm like, I don't know. I think obviously picking Sewell was great. Transforming Goff from this broken guy in LA to who he is now, really great. I got to see it. Like, I really do think there's going to be a significant drop off.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he deserves more credit than what he gets in terms of, you know, running the team. I guess, like, what coach doesn't get hurt by losing coordinators? What coach doesn't get hurt if they don't have good players? I mean, everyone thinks, you know, pretty highly of Kyle Shanahan right now. I mean, his record was terrible before he got, like, Jimmy. Like, I think he started his tenure and I was 0-10.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and didn't Campbell start like 0-something huge? And it was,
oh yeah, they were 0-10 as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, like, yeah, but you're to lose them both is, you know,
it's tough. I mean, you look at Shanahan, lost Robert Saleh, went back to the Super Bowl, lost D'Amico Ryans, went back to the Super Bowl. Like, do I think Dan Campbell's capable of that when he...
It's harder because the Niners could lose. You could take every single offensive coach away from the Niners, or not just him. I mean, you know, McVay, you know, with... Or defensive guy. You could take... If a guy who invented the offense is still there... As the head coach, that's why.
Like,
that's
McVay lost value. Zach Taylor. McVay lost the model.
Like, it's just,
it doesn't matter.
Just take them all. It, like, I'm the tree. I'm the base. You can take all.
You think Dan Campbell's at that level?
No, I'm saying we'll find out.
Right. That's what I'm kind of.
I don't think he's at that level because he clearly doesn't. Is he? He can't be a defensive guy. Like, didn't he?
He's involved more with the offense as a former tight end, and as I think he's much.
But
more,
like, yeah, I mean, if we did a fantasy draft of offensive guys, where does he go? Close to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
He's
one of the only in the league that's the John Harbaugh type, who doesn't coach either side of the ball. Specifically, is more of a CEO motivator type. Who runs the show?
Isn't it kind of crazy in 2020? Like, how do you even have that? How do you get the job?
Right.
I mean,
John Harbaugh was a special teams coordinator when he got that job in Baltimore. Pretty crazy. And then Dan Campbell, I mean, when he was hired, it was a joke. Remember, we're going to bite off kneecaps. Everybody's like, one and done. And he's
always. I do think he contributes a ton to their overall just team toughness. I think he works super well with Brad Holmes. They seem to always draft guys that fit what they want.
And as a division rival, I'm supposed to hate him. I love that guy. I think I saw him on the, what was it, the Bussin' with the Boys the other day. And
he
was
on. Animals.
He's great. He's hilarious. He's like, seems like a really nice guy. He seems like a genuine dude. He was talking
to you right now. Inslee for him and Belichick just miserable all the time.
He said the other day he eats like over 2,000 calories of ice cream a night because he's like burning so many calories throughout the day that, like, he's like, yeah, I'll have 3 pints of ice cream before.
Didn't he say, I think it was Hard Knocks that he drinks like an absurd amount of coffee.
Yeah, it's like 15-20 cups of coffee a day. I'm like, the dude's a character and I like him. It's just I don't know that he's at that level of coaches where you can lose both coordinators and still find success. So I think a big regression there. Next we'll go to Chicago. Everybody last year wanted to pick them to be a success. Their over under last year was 8.5 and they won 4 games. Like, it was a disaster in Chicago. They fired Eberflus. Their interim head coach was an absolute disaster. That team was not prepared for most games. So they bring in Ben Johnson. I think he was the best available head coaching hire. They got him. They paid top dollar. I believe he's the third highest paid head coach in the NFL. He gets to run the show. He gets to build this team in his image. And I think the only problem with all that is his GM is still probably one of the worst in the NFL. He got an extension despite only winning like 25% of his games. Ryan Poles is just, I think, an awful GM, and I think he picked the wrong quarterback last year. I think Caleb Williams is obviously way worse than Jaden Daniels, but we could come out at the end of this year and be like, he was the fourth or fifth best QB in his own draft. I think Bo Nix has shown he's really good. McCarthy will see. Penix will see. Man, oh man, I have them going 6-11. It's a tough division. I think they're worse than the other three teams in the division, so they'll probably go 1-5, 2-4 in the division. I think the quarterback is just a major liability. He might throw for a lot of yards this year. I don't think he's going to win a lot of games. I don't think he's a winning football player. I think he makes a lot of mistakes. I think he's shockingly inaccurate in big moments. once I saw him play against Seattle on Thursday Night Football last year, I was 100% out. I remain 100% out. I got him 6-11. I think Caleb's going to be labeled officially a bust by the end of this season.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's a huge story because he was hyped, like, I don't want to say as much as like Trevor Lawrence, but he was, I would say he was the top choice in the draft for so long. And just to the point, yeah, I have major questions just on the field. And then some of the body language behavior off it like that, I can't get that temper tantrum thing out of my head throughout the target practice with the Ned, which might seem so tiny, like, and it probably is. Like, I mean, he could have a fine season, I guess, but that doesn't happen unless you're doing that. You did that last year. You're still doing it, and no one wants to see that.
A lot of the off-season stuff we talked about, so embarrassing.
Yeah, the amount of sacks he takes is so beyond his offensive line. Does not get rid of the ball. He needs to have a good September. Forget year. He needs to have a good September. Mm-hmm. Out of nowhere, they gave Tyson Bagent a bunch of money to be a backup. And
I mean, they have spent massively on that offensive line, traded away draft capital, like sank everything into improving that offensive line. I think all the guys that they brought in are excellent run blockers. I don't think any of them are great pass blockers. I also think they're kind of old. Like, unless Ben Johnson concocts the 99 Rams defense out of, or Rams offense out of nothing, I do not see it. Like, weapons are good, sure.
They're clearly, to me, the worst team in the division. And, yeah, like you said, it's hard to have a good record if you don't play your division well. I have them going 6-11 also. And
over under 8.5. Can you believe that? I mean, back-to-back seasons that the hype for them is that big. Granted, they're going to be better this year. They could win 7-8 games. They'll be better than they were last year, but to still have their over-under set at 8.5 is pretty wild for a team that's so deficient in so many areas. Like, Ben Johnson isn't a miracle worker. I think you'll have them playing better maybe under a new quarterback in a couple of years, or, you know, maybe next year when their cap is supposedly in a better spot, they can contend then, but not this year. That's the NFC North preview from the You Like That Feels Great Baby podcast. I have the Vikings winning the division at 12-5 and a tiebreaker over Green Bay at 12-5, Detroit at a surprising 9-8, and Chicago at 6-11. Joey has a completely different NFC North with Detroit winning the division at 11-6, the Vikings making the playoffs at 10-7, and then the Packers at 8-9 and the Bears at 6-11. Let's move to the NFC West, Joey's favorite division. We got to start with your boys. I'm not going to say what record I have for them yet. I'm just going to say, boy, is that schedule looking mighty nice. I think this is a team that, if Robert Saleh can get them playing, I would say a B-minus defense compared to last year's, I would say D-minus. I really think this team can get right back to the top of that division. I believe in Kyle Shanahan. I believe that if this team stays healthy, which is basically the story every year, they can contend for a Super Bowl. I don't think they're going to stay healthy. That's why I don't have them, you know, finishing at the absolute top of the NFC. I think they're going to be a contender. I don't think they're going to win the Super Bowl. I don't think they're going to make the Super Bowl, but I think that roster and that schedule lines up for them to find some success. Joey, what do you got for your boys?
Where to start? Before I say the record, here's what I'm confident in. I'm confident they're going to be able to score. If Christian McCaffrey stays healthy, which by all accounts, he looks best shape of his life season. That's what I'm hearing. Okay, well, we'll see. But, like, he's got apparently no ill effects from last year's injuries, which cannot be understated how big of an impact he can have, especially with their red zone struggles last year. George Kittle had the best season of his career probably last year. I personally, and I think some numbers back it up, Brock Purdy was not as bad as people think he was. In fact, I thought he had a good year, like good to okay, which with everything that happened was fine. I thought early in the season he had a couple of the best games I've ever seen him play when there was nobody playing, but then, you know, just time
the season went on, he, you know, tried to do too much and hurt the team. But I'm confident in him. I'm confident in their receivers. I know a lot of people are, but Jennings showed up yesterday, so that's nice. Him, Pearsall, they're going to get Brandon Ayuk back around week six.
Kittle and CMC are healthy. Like, you don't really need a ton from the receivers.
Yeah, their offensive line is clearly the weakest unit on the offense outside of Trent Williams, who, again, he's had injury issues and he's another year closer to 40. You know, what's his health? I don't love anyone else on the offensive line.
Not a big McKivitz guy?
He's probably the best one out of the other non-Trent Williams linemen, which is crazy. Defensively, I got a lot of questions defensively. I think, you know, outside of Nick Bosa, their front has been, I mean, last year was bad. It's evident in their draft. They took Michael Williams. They took the Texas defensive tackle. Then they took a linebacker in the third round. Like, their front, they admittedly said it was bad. And if the rookies can make an impact, it could go a long way in how their defense plays. Obviously, getting solid back is huge. As we say all the time, we're a body language vibes guy, and boy, there's not many guys who go with more vibes than Robert Saleh. Fred Warner is still, in my opinion, the best linebacker in football. They lost Dre Greenlaw, which, you know, he didn't play much last year after the Achilles tear in the Super Bowl, but he's really good. The back end, I got questions outside of Lenore. They're not very. They're also slow. They don't cover well. And special teams is a disaster. And that's not even mentioning Jake Moody, who we'll see. He might. I gotta imagine it's pretty hard to kick when you think you're getting cut every week. So we'll see. But they invested a new long snapper, new special teams coordinator, new punter. So everything else has changed. We're trying to, it's not just Jake Moody. Their kickoff and punt return coverage is like worst in the NFL. It's so beyond the place kicking.
I feel like this is like year three of Shanahan being like, special teams is an emphasis. Like, at some point they got to get better.
He deserves some of the blame before, because even he admittedly said, I don't put much emphasis on special teams, which is a wild thing to say as a head football coach, the NFL. And then when he started to put emphasis on it by drafting Jake Moody, and so it just hasn't gotten any better. But I do have them going 11-6. I don't have them winning the division. I don't think that's going to win them the division, but their schedule is a huge factor. Their schedule, if they are healthy and they do play well and some of these defensive rookies hit, they could be better than 11-6. With the schedule they have.
They follow the Rams progression of last year where these defensive rookies are like impact guys. They could be a contender.
Yeah, you tell me that Michael Williams is Jared Verse. Yeah, they'd be pretty good.
Absolutely. But, and if they can get a healthy season from, you know, Bosa, Kittle, and McCaffrey and Williams. If you get three out of four of those guys playing, like,
kind of like, plus. I think they're a worse version of Detroit. I still think the Niners have a lot more A players than still most teams in the league. If McCaffrey's healthy, he was the best running back in football until Saquon. If he's healthy, that them two are in a league of their own, in my opinion. Kittle, everyone is saying he's been replaced by Brock Bowers. He had an incredible year, but Kittle's right there. Fred Warner, Nick, there's some of these are just all pro level players. I just don't think if some of these rookies can hit, they'll be plus with their schedule. And with Saleh, I do. It'd be hard pressed. I think they're one of the best, most well coached teams in the league. We'll see. But defensively, I have a lot of questions defensively.
That's what I was going to say, too, is like I have the confidence in Saleh to get the best out of that defense, but the talent in that room, as we saw last year, it was really bad, especially after the injuries. This year, it's improving, and the coaching is improving, but obviously they got a long way to go with how awful that defense was last year. We'll see. I have them going 11-6 as well. I actually have them winning the division because I think there's going to be a few significant stories in that division. Let's start with the team that you have winning the division. I actually have them going 9-8, and that's the Los Angeles Rams. I think Matthew Stafford's injury is serious. And the reason I have them going 9-8, I was tempted to make them 7-10 or worse. I think he misses many games this year. Multiple games, many games. I think he misses maybe 6-plus games this year. When you're a 38, 39-year-old quarterback and your back is the injury, that's a lot different than knee, elbow, shoulder. It's like, you know, those wily old guys can find a way to get the ball where it needs to go. Back is completely different. I think the Rams are a good team. I think people forget that they were 1-4 last year and minutes away from just like selling and blowing up the roster. Wasn't that crazy? I mean,
Niners lost week one to, no, they won week one to the Jets, beat the Jets at home. Yeah. They lost to Minnesota. And you're like, okay, no problem. The Rams are awful. They mostly because they were depleted everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they went up, I think, 14-0 and blew it in LA against the Rams. And it was like, we're now 1-2. And then that was just like, that was.
Had they put the hammer down and won that game, given that the Rams would lose the next two after that, I mean, there's a real chance Stafford would have got traded somewhere. Or, you know, Cooper Kupp or whoever else.
The Rams wanted him so bad. And now it does seem like the Rams are trying to get rid of him so bad.
I mean,
they keep asking him to like the contract stuff in the offseason. You know, that don't they have like multiple picks next year?
Mm-hmm. Finally, for the first time in forever.
Like move up and who knows? Arch Manning at this point might be a second rounder. We don't know.
Yeah. Fifth.
But yeah, no, I.
So you make the case for them. You have them winning the division.
I do think Stafford stays healthy for the most part. I think their defense is very good. What they did to Minnesota and then playing Philly. I mean, they gave Philly the toughest run in the playoffs.
Of anybody.
And, I mean, Jared Verse that game made me think, like, there's going to be some defensive player of the year tickets, like, next year, this year. And, yeah, they added Devontae Adams. I know they lost Cooper Kupp, but, you know, he's
probably an upgrade at this point.
Yeah, probably. But you're right. Not if Jimmy's thrown to him.
I really think Jimmy's going to play 6-plus games this year. Something about the whole
situation. Hey, Adams, you can't tell me he wasn't sick of Jimmy in Vegas. And he's like, I come here and I'm back with you.
Yeah, he's like, he was afraid of Jimmy's hospital.
You could do a lot worse. You could do a lot worse than Devontae Adams, you know, Puka and Kyron Williams.
It's excellent. And then on the defense, he got Verse as a star. I mean, they got the blue chippers. I just think if Stafford misses any time, they're completely hosed. I think Jimmy's we love him, but schedule's brutal.
Like if you think the Niners and Rams are similar in terms of talent, outcome, whatever.
Hmm.
The Niners playing the Browns, Giants, and Bears.
Yeah.
Instead of playing the Ravens, Eagles, and Lions.
Huge difference.
That's
part of the reason I got them 9-8 and missing the playoffs on a tiebreaker. I do think there's regression there if Stafford's even, if he's healthy. I don't know. People forget how bad they were through 5 weeks last year. Yes, they finished on fire and they gave an excellent run to the Eagles and they beat the Vikes. I get it. But, I mean, that's with Jared Verse playing out of his mind and Stafford playing some of the best football of his life. If you don't get A-plus out of both of those guys this year, this roster, in my opinion, is not talented enough for them to still win 10 and 11 games with so-so efforts from their star players. I think, obviously, Nacua is great. I don't think he's, like, the best receiver in the NFL. I think Adams is great. He's also, like, probably in his final or second to last season in the league. Kyron Williams has had a lot of touches the last 2 years. I just picked him up in fantasy, and I'm like, oh, boy, watch him get hurt like early on after having all those touches. I think it's a crater team. I think there's a chance the bottom could fall out. Like I said, last year they were on the verge of blowing it up and really, you know, starting from scratch. And yes, they went on a run. I don't know if that's sustainable this year. We'll go to the Seahawks. We were going to have my brother Evan on the pod, but he pulled out at the last minute with a little bit of a sore throat and a little bit of a situation in his life. And congratulations to Evan and Laura. They're pregnant, for those who don't know. And the baby could be coming soon. So something to keep an eye on for fans of the pod. I'm about to be an uncle and Evan's about to be a dad. So very exciting. About to join Joey in the ranks of fatherhood.
Yeah, I have to say he's got no time to watch any games this week or maybe the rest of his life, but no big deal.
Yeah, no big deal. I mean, football is not going to be a high priority for the next few months, but he did have the time to put together a couple notes about his beloved Seahawks this year. He's got them going 10-7. Some notes from him. So he says, I think we're the Steelers of the NFC. We're going to be perpetually mid if they keep running the team the way that they are now. The defense is going to be good, top 10 for sure, but likely not top 5. The X factor is the run game. Kenneth Walker's in a contract year. Evan says, can he stay healthy? Him and Charbonnet are a fantastic 1-2 punch. If they stay healthy and effective, they can be a playoff team. If not, that run game is going to struggle. He thinks they go 10-7, second in the division. He says... it's either going to be SF or LA. One will win the West. The other inevitably will get a boatload of injuries and therefore suck. He doesn't know who it's going to be. But so he's confident that the Seahawks will finish in second, not first. So there you have it. I also have him going 10-7. I think it's an elite defense. I think McDonald deserves a lot of credit for going 10-7 last year in the first year of his deal. That team under Carroll looked pretty lifeless kind of at the end. And I think 10-7 is a realistic goal for them. I think they're elite at all three levels on defense. I think JSN, Cup, Walker, that's a good 1-2-3 for them. It all comes down to Darnold, and I think he'll be okay. I don't think he'll be great. If he's great, they could win the division. I think he'll be so-so. They also have an easier schedule than the Rams. I have them going 10-7. Joey, what about you?
Well, I had him going 0-17, but then I changed it. I had him also going 10-7. I honestly don't know what to make of Seattle. I thought it was a pretty good point. I kind of agree with Evan about them kind of being in the middle of like, kind of like Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say they're mid. I think they're better than Pittsburgh. I guess just with all the changes they made offensively, I'm asking myself, are they better? I don't know. I don't know that they're better.
They lost DK and Geno, two pretty good players.
And Tyler Lockett, which I know he's right. End of his, but again, I like Cooper Kupp as a player, but is he better than DK Metcalf at this point?
Probably not.
Is he on the field more than him? I don't even know, because he gets hurt, and Metcalf gets hurt, and
a lot of talk that the Seahawks
Geno Smith. I don't know.
They're saying. The Seahawks fans are saying that their offensive coordinator last year, Ryan Grubb, who coached Washington's offense to the national title game with Michael Penix, they thought that guy was awful. Like, they hated him. If you look at any of the Seahawks message boards, yeah, and now look how that's going. No, but they hated that guy, and they wanted him out of town. He was a one-and-done as offensive coordinator. They bring in Clint Kubiak. A lot of hope that he can turn things around there with his own blocking scheme, but he's got to be
great. I was having a debate with a Raider fan about Geno Smith, and he was super down. He's like, basically like, what a waste of money. Like, can't believe this is who he. And I'm like, look, is he a top 10 guy? No, but you could do a lot worse.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he can throw the ball. He can put up points. You know, he does sometimes, I feel like, especially a couple of games against the Niners, he might throw a pick that really costs you. But, you know, I guess him in Seattle worked for,
right?
Like, you know, as bad as you could have thought Geno Smith working. I mean, yeah. If your expectations were, you know, championship game appearances, Super Bowl, like, probably not.
They made the playoffs his first year as a starter, and they went 10-7 last year. I mean, that's impressive for him and for that situation.
I mean, more likely than not, that Darnold doesn't reach that than reaches it. And if I'm Darnold, and if I'm, I don't love hearing already about how they like Jalen Milroe. Like, oh, there's going to be Packers for him my first game? My first game after signing a big deal? Like, you're going to take me off to run this game? And, like, I wish I would have saved that. Like, I don't know if I texted it or said it or thought it, but, like, I really liked Jalen Milroe out of Alabama. Like, I thought he had tool. Like, I really, so, like, it makes sense to me why Seattle drafted him and then likes him.
Mm-hmm.
But again, if I'm Darnold, I'm like,
what the hell?
And again, it just, quarterbacks are just so different. Like, you don't want to, like, oh, I don't care if you have Michael Vick running the package. Like, it throws everything off, in my opinion.
I
take your quarterback off, put him at, like, it's just weird.
Never liked it.
It's just weird. And yeah, I guess with all these moves they made offensively, I can't convince myself they're better. And I guess defensively, when the Niners have put up points against Seattle, I know they didn't. The Niners have one of the worst games they ever did last year at home against Seattle,
mm-hmm.
when Geno Smith beat him with 10 seconds left, I think. But yeah, I mean, I like his. That's a good thing. I think they're finished like second, because I think one of these teams is going to have a very disappointing year.
And that's, they're kind of like Pittsburgh. This is their ceiling. I don't think they can go 13.
I also don't think they can go 4-13.
I agree. I think there's too much talent, and that head coach knows how to coach a defense. I think they're going to be better than average. So we all have them going 10-7. I think that's about right. They went 10-7 last year. Did they improve this offseason? I don't know. Did they get worse? I don't think so. So 10-7 for Seattle. All that's left is the Cardinals. I have them going 7-10. You have them going 8-9. Look, Kyler went 36-45 as a starter to this point in his career. Can't trust him.
He's in a contract year too, I think.
Or
if he's not in a contract year, they could cut him or something like that.
Because there's a lot of, if he doesn't win this year, maybe they move on from him. Gannon's defense, I think he's good at scheming defense. I think he's a pretty decent head coach. I just don't think he has the horses. They're another, like Carolina, like sexy pick that all these like professional bettors and people on TV love to say, watch out for Arizona. I don't see it. I think Murray is not a winning player. I think the defense doesn't have the horses. There's a little bit of talent there on offense, especially if Marvin Harrison Jr. like shows up in year two after being a bit of a disappointment year one. 7-10 for me. I don't see much from them.
I'm a little different. I have them going a game better, but I actually think they could win 9 or 10 games. I like their team. I like some of the additions they made, especially defensively. I think James Conner is criminally underrated.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at their draft. Yeah, I mean, they got that corner from Michigan, Will Johnson, the second round.
Mm-hmm. People love him.
Yeah. And big defensive tackle in the first round. Yeah, I just, they've always played the Niners pretty frisky. And Kyler, he's got a lot of things I don't like in a quarterback, like bad study habits, apparently. Throws one of the prettiest balls I've ever seen. I mean, he's right, it looks great. It's just
5 full seasons.
Trey McBride's elite fantasy tight end.
Yeah. I got to see it. I mean, week one at the Saints, everybody thinks that they're going to win. They're like 6.5-point favorites. I got to see it, man. I got to see Kyler like put together an 8-game stretch of elite football, because to this point, he's only able to do 3.
I think he actually could do 8 weeks of elite football. Could he do 8 weeks of winning football?
Right. I mean, he's so talented. It's just, I've never seen the complete product put together. So till I see it, I can't put them anywhere near the top of the division. They could surprise, I suppose, especially if their first two draft picks hit, but I got them going 7-10. Joey's got them going 8-9. That's your NFC West preview for the You Like That Feels Great Baby podcast. I have the Niners winning the division at 11-6, Seattle at 10-7, the Rams with a possibly injured Stafford at 9-8, and the Cardinals bottoming out at 7-10. Joey has the Rams win the division at 11-6 and a tiebreaker over the Niners at 11-6. He also has Seattle at 10-7 and then Arizona at 8-9. Joey, Jack and the Bum of the Week time. Excellent nominees this week. One of our best after last week when we were like, gosh, who had a bad week? Shedeur Sanders? I don't know. This week, it's like, where do you even start? Arch Manning, right at the top. I mean, how bad was he in that game? I get that Ohio State's coached by, you know, Ryan Day, who won a national title last year, and Matt Patricia, who's won a Super Bowl as a defensive coordinator. I get it's very tough. It's a tough, you know, first primetime, big, important start of his career. He was awful. And the first three quarters, he was like an F minus. And in the fourth, he threw a couple good balls to get his stats back to somewhere near respectability. But man, was he awful in that game for a guy with that kind of hype. Kalen DeBoer has to be there. Bama was awful. Absolutely whooped by Florida State, who I believe Alabama was more than a double digit. It was like 17-point favorite in that game. And they got crushed. Already talking about firing him 1 week into the season. Like, all Alabama message boards are about, you know, who do we get for next year? Like, he's already out. That's how bad it's going there. All sorts of things came out in the media, by the way, with DeBoer. Like, these guys are partying until 2 a.m. the night before games, and he doesn't do anything. Guys are missing the bus to the stadium. Apparently, that happened a couple times last year. Happened in week one.
That happened with Nick Saban.
Under Saban, that shit ain't flying. So, I mean, he's already on his way out there at Bama. And then a couple other candidates that nobody's going to bring up, but I will. The Cowboys and the Packers. Like, the Cowboys made a trade that enraged their fans and made them the butt of jokes throughout the league. Jerry Jones getting made fun of. Horrible timing with that trade. He misplayed the situation. Packers get him this week. They give him $188 million sight unseen. Apparently, when you're mentioning the fifth and sixth vertebrae on the back, that's never a good thing. Apparently, he's going to require regular epidurals to play throughout the season. His back injury in Dallas was real. He wasn't faking that shit.
Which is crazy, because I thought, like, all right, dude, like, $188 million would make my back feel better. But sounds like it really was a back injury. Which is, like, crazy that his hold in might have, like, actually hid the fact that he couldn't practice, even if he, oh man,
could be the rare lose here. Like, Dallas loses, you know, this iconic player.
I'll talk about that specifically more in my hot take. It's more got like my hot take, but yeah, we're back to elite bums.
Mm-hmm.
Arch Manning could not have more of a wet napkin of a first game. Kalen DeBoer, Alabama, just got... I read that's like his fourth double-digit loss as a... Or double-digit favorite loss. Am I saying that right? Like, he's lost four games to like, unranked teams as, like, a double-digit favorite.
And I believe he's 6-4 in those games, and Nick Saban was 113-1 in those situations.
I mean... Look, here out there, you could lose to LSU. You could probably lose to, you know, Texas. You can't lose to Florida State. And I keep hearing this excuse of, like, the transfer portal, like, all these preseason rankings really mean nothing because every team changes every single freaking player they got. But this can't happen. It can't happen at Alabama. And, yeah, I mean, but anyways, the Jack of the Bum of the Week is Mr. Bill Belichick, who
Chapel Bill.
When you think he can't, he is the coaching version of Russell Wilson, but worse, because he got higher as a coach than Russell did as a player. Really awesome career for Russell Wilson as a whole. Does not sniff Belichick 6 Super Bowls.
Mm.
As we all know, let's ride. Broncos country fell beyond just the X's and O's, fell off a cliff for him. Just like, this guy, people didn't want to be his friend. It's just weird. The whole, like, I need my own parking space. Boop. Like, Bill, has fallen further than that. We are now coaching college, getting worked by Sonny Dykes in TCU. You didn't lose to Dabo Swinney in Clemson. You didn't lose to Mario Cristobal Miami. At home, standalone game, Monday Night Football, essentially, college version, Labor Day. Everyone's there. Michael Jordan's there. Roy Williams, all these people there.
Lawrence Taylor, who he coached to multiple Super Bowl titles.
Oh, I would feel like not only did I lose, I just wasted everyone in America's time. And like, there's no way. I mean, this can't. How does he recruit? Honestly, how does he recruit? Does he recruit?
If you looked at that game, you would think.
I mean, just like personality.
Right. Do you want to
like? Do you think he's calling a 17-year-old who like legitimately like, hang on, Bill, I got like, hey, Sark in Texas is on the other line, and he's gonna offer me like hanging out with Matthew McConaughey and like some $10 million or something. Like Bill's like, well, I'll make you a work card and do your job. Like, it's just a different. I don't. From what I understand, TCU has a better roster right now than so like it's not
surprising. And a very good quarterback.
Not surprising you lost. But to go up the field, up and down the first drive, 7-0, you're like, oh, like the hoodie is back. To go 48-14, again.
41 unanswered.
To what seems like an average team in the Big 12.
Yeah. I mean, this is TCU probably somewhere in the 30s or 40s nationally, you know.
You know how like an asterisk is essentially like a plus and then like another line, like it looks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying the asterisk is there, but like we're starting to get like the vertical and then like the horizontal like for like his career as an NFL head coach. Like, were you just happen to be the coach when Tom Brady was there? I mean.
He's crushing his legacy by continuing to coach and continuing so poorly.
Like, not just Brady, but someone was talking about, like, look, you say what you want about Josh McDaniels as a head coach, but when he was the offensive coordinator, he knew what he was doing. Like, didn't he leave for the Raiders? Well, I know he left, but, like, and Bill hired Matt Patricia?
Yeah. To be his offensive play caller.
Like, again, it's a red flag when no one wants to work for you.
Who's his defensive coordinator at North Carolina?
I heard this on a bride. I totally forget.
His son.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember.
He looks like an absolute dunce on the sideline with his stupid haircut and his stupid, I mean, good God almighty.
Like, you know what? See, this is where I kind of like, you know, the one thing about the Ohio State, Texas is like, look, again, say what you want. It's crazy. Say what you want about Josh McDaniels as a head coach. I know, like, he knows offensive football, right? Mm. Say what you want about Matt Patricia. More than overqualified to be a defensive coordinator in college football. Like, no, like, shocker why Arch Manning is like, what the hell am I looking at? Like, because not only they're talented, too. I mean, arguably, they got the best defensive player in college football in Caleb Downs. So, it makes sense. But, like, Bill, like we know you're a defensive guy. Okay, you just gave up almost 50 burger to TCU.
That's the most, like, points he's ever given up as a head coach is in his entire career.
So was Patricia the defensive coordinator for, like, all this? He couldn't have been, was he? Like,
well, it was Romeo Crennel for the first three, and then Crennel left. And then I believe it was Patricia, it was Flores in name only, really. It's always been Belichick calling the defense for the other two. And then, I mean,
like,
clearly the game has passed him by in a massive way, both personally and X's and O's. Like, it is a disaster out there. I thought after that first drive, too, I'm like, this is so easy for him. He's the greatest NFL coach of all time. Of course he's going to crush college. And by the end of the game, especially after the 41 unanswered by TCU, you're like,
it was elder abuse.
He may have actually never been good. Like, maybe he just had the greatest defensive player of all time and the greatest offensive player of all time while he was coach of the Giants defense and coach of the Patriots when they had Brady. I mean, like, maybe he was just destined to be that guy he was on the Browns.
Is he more of like a Dan Campbell guy?
I think he's a defensive head coach.
You know what you're saying? Like, he's absolutely not a rah-rah guy. Like,
right.
No, that, but like, was he extremely dependent on his coordinators?
Apparently. I mean, I think he was extremely dependent on his quarterback. You look at his record without Brady and with Brady, it's like the difference getting fired and being the GOAT.
I don't know. Like, well, I guess you're right.
Horrible. You were saying, a lot of people, visually, a 0 out of 10. Like, eye test, even worse than
negative,
the stats.
Negative double zero. I mean, I guess you look at a lot of people like Andy Reid. It's like, yeah, well, I mean, I think a lot of coaches could win a lot of football games if they had either Donovan McNabb or Patrick Mahomes.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that's partly why I think some of these, like Kyle, who, like, man, this guy's doing really well for Nick Mullins and C.J. Beathard. And we're like, McVay's done it. Like, he, I mean, didn't he? Like, that, remember, was it two years ago? Or was it three when, like, Baker got there, like, 2 days before Thursday Night Football? And they're like, oh, my God, this guy's fixed Baker Mayfield. Like, in 48 hours. It's like, okay, like, Bill, like, he won 6 Super Bowls. You can never take that away from him. But, like, all this shit, plus, like, the shit with his girlfriend, it's just weird. It's so weird.
He's become a punchline, not only off the field, but now on the field, too. Like, you can say, oh, his last season in New England was bad. His second to last season, he made the playoffs with Mac Jones. Like, he wasn't atrocious until his final season in New England. Then he did this media tour, and people were like, hey, he's actually funny. Now he's all the way to that part of his career again where it's like everybody thinks he's awful and they think he's a weirdo, like, who's dating a 24-year-old that's, like, dominating his life. It's like, guy's a joke. It's really sad to see. Like, I think his legacy is basically crushed. Like, nobody's ever going to think he was the greatest coach of all time. They're going to think, man, that guy got carried by Tom Brady. Like, that's all we're ever going
to think. I'm trying to think, like, what's a comp?
It's like if Michael Jordan played 5 years for the Wizards. And just,
oh no, so awful. I thought you were going to say, like, I don't know, like if Phil Jackson went to go coach on the team, like, just didn't know how to play.
But he went back to college and couldn't even get a good college to hire him. If Phil Jackson,
that's
says,
the
hey,
thing too. He, why, like, why is his experience? Like, why didn't Alabama hire him?
Say Phil Jackson in 2011 or whatever retires with the Lakers after his 12th appearance in the NBA Finals and goes, hey, college basketball, who wants to hire me? And it's like, Gonzaga's like, nah. And you know, Villanova's like, nah. Yeah. And then someone goes, oh, well, we got a job for you here at Pepperdine or at, you know, it's so shocking to see him coaching North Carolina football. Like, what do they have? They had Mitch Trubisky a few years ago. They had Drake May.
They're like, what, to coach? You're like, oh, I want to go to North Carolina to coach. Like, what, basketball? Like,
yeah, football? What a shit show. Bill Belichick, yet again, for probably the third or fourth time.
I might be on here again.
Jack in the bum.
How many times? Because you get to a point of so, like, what's the word? Irrelevant. You don't even make this list.
Right?
It's like, yeah.
You have to have reached a certain high to be eligible, and it's like, it's been so long since he was relevant.
Like I, next week, what is it with the ACC? So what? Shoot, they play Stanford? Like, is that team coming to Cal and beating this left-hand quarterback?
Hell no. Not the Calgarithm, not Justin Wilcox Calgarithm. And the boys. Hell no.
Calgarithm, that's, I didn't know that. That's good.
Dude, if they went to Cal right
I'm
now.
I'm not saying that kid's name because I'm going to mispronounce it. But that kid from Hawaii? Who I saw, like, or it's the holy smokes.
Great.
True
Looks
freshman.
Great. Watch out. No. If they played Cal, if they played Stanford or whatever, they're going to be touchdown underdogs.
They might be.
Well, Stanford lost to Hawaii, but still, I mean, what a disaster for Bill Belichick. We got to get to week one. This pod's running pretty long. It's a super pod. We got so much going on. We got games, dude. Let's start with the Niners at Seahawks. Niners favored by 2.5. I think this is a tough start for the year for the Niners against McDonald's elite defense. I would imagine you're going to be like, how does CMC look? How do Pearsall and Jennings function as like that 1A, 1B to start the year? Your thoughts on game one?
Yeah. I don't know. I hate week one.
I just hate it so much. It's just like you win, you're like, oh, we're in this division. You lose, you're like, damn, we're already 0-1 in the division. Again, I'm confident.
On the road, too, against your big rival.
To be honest, though, I don't mind opening up on the road.
Yeah, I think it'd be a close. I think it's going to be a close game.
I think it's going to be a defensive game.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I do. It seems like we are getting healthier. Like, again, Juwan Jennings' calf magically got better. Big one is Dominic Pooney is healthy, a right guard. If Christian McCaffrey's healthy, I think the 49ers, when healthy and playing their best, are a better football team than when Seattle's healthy and playing their best.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's close. But I do like the Niners come out with a close win. I think it's the first time we played in Seattle on a Sunday, like in a long time.
I feel like this game's been on Thursday night for the last like decade.
Yeah. It's been on Thanksgiving. It's been on Thursdays. It's been on Mondays. It's always been a big one. I think Seattle will keep it close for sure. I think it's going to be a defensive game. I think it's probably the best game of the late window. I think the Detroit-Green Bay game will be obviously really good, but we already kind of know what those two teams are going to be. I think we'd be surprised if either of them like truly sucked or was like, you know, the best team in the NFL. With this one, it's like the Niners could lay an egg. They could lose 34-3. The Seahawks could lose an egg. They could lose, you know, 24-0. We don't know. You know, the Niners could not be healthy. They could have a bad offensive line. Darnold could suck and outside of O'Connell's system. Like, we don't know. It's going to be an interesting one to watch. I think it's going to be a low score.
I do think with so many moving parts, especially on offense, specifically for Seattle, I think week one, I think it's a good time to play them.
Mm-hmm.
I think they will be more to you. I mean, again, if I'm Sam Darnold, the last couple games in my head did not go well.
Mm-hmm.
And first game, new team at home, he's going to want to not suck.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Niners could benefit from that a bit. And, you know, if the Niners are healthy, it's the same cast of guys that's been here for a while. Like, they're going to – Kyle's probably going to say, hey, we're going to run the same 15 plays we've been running to start the game for the last, like, 5-6 years.
I like it. I it's going to be low scoring. It's going to be – Seattle's probably going to struggle to score. I know Salah, you know, has done well against them in the past. It's going to be a good one. Vikings-Bears – Monday Night Football, J.J. McCarthy's debut, that's what all eyes are going to be on. Frankly, Flores versus Ben Johnson is going to be fascinating. I'm really excited to see that. Obviously, I think maybe nobody in the NFL has more pressure on them in week one than Caleb Williams to show like, hey, I learned something from Ben Johnson this offseason. But all eyes are on McCarthy. We're favored by 1.5. I think we win the game. I think Brian Flores, especially early in the season, like teams cannot figure him out. Like we started 5-0 last year. We started in our last healthy season without, you know, quarterbacks tearing their Achilles. We started, I think, 7-1 2022. I think we'll get off to a hot start. I think we'll win this game. Just want to see McCarthy, like, not turn the ball over and just, like, get the ball to his guys. Don't think we need to do too much because I think Flores will keep Williams at bay. What do you see in this one?
Yeah, I like Minnesota in this game. There's a lot of pressure on Caleb Williams. At home, Monday Night Football, man, you couple 3-and-outs, that place is going to get loud.
I really hope it does.
You might hear some Bajan chants in the crowd if they go a couple 3-and-outs.
We want the secret Bajan in.
Yeah, and it's week one at home, Monday Night Football. Moving parts on the offensive line for Chicago with new.
Mm.
Last thing I want to see is some heat. And Brian Flores is going to bring the heat. And Caleb,
I think this year with Allen and Hargrave and like a good defensive line, he's going to not need to blitz that much and still get a ton of pressure. Last year,
I think that's like that. It's just a core principle. And
we're going to light him up.
Yeah. And it's just, again, it's just, it worked. It's worked, and I mean, yeah, like, hey, Caleb, like, how fast do you process a new offense with offensive line?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
gotta be accurate.
Literally, the first
you know, because I'm going to say it, I'm going to watch it now too. First drive, you are going to see 6-7 guys flat on the line of scrimmage. Which ones are coming? Which ones aren't? Get it
out. Mm-hmm. Get the ball to Rome Odunze too, because if he doesn't get the ball, I mean, that guy complains. His dad complains. He's like, my son is the best wide receiver in the NFL, and he's not getting the ball. Odunze's like, well, I would have led the league in catches as a rookie last year if we could have got the ball out on time. Like, that's a whole another thing to watch for. Like, man, oh, man. I only like the Vikes in this game because of the opponent. I think if we were playing a better team, I'd be a little more worried, but I do feel confident about
it. Yeah, it's definitely not. Like, could be a lot of pressure on McCarthy, too. But I think...
against a so-so defense, maybe we put up 20. That might be enough. I think McCarthy's just got to manage the offense the first few weeks. We're not going to ask him to turn it loose until he shows that he can and until we play an opponent that think he got to turn it loose against.
It's crazy because at Michigan, it was like, felt very much like it was like hike and hand the ball off. But it was the NFL. It's a big game. Monday Night Football first.
They trust O'Connell to figure out, like, he had his pick of, you know, he could have had Bo Nix. He could have had Michael Penix. Probably could have traded up for Jaden Daniels if he really wanted to. And he was like, no, I want McCarthy. So I trust that he got it right. We'll see. Marquee games, week one. Dallas at Philly. Philly's going to beat the snot out of them, I think. I don't think Dallas has a chance in that one. Chargers, Kansas City in Brazil, an interesting one. I think it's going to be high scoring. I feel like those international games, especially early in the season, get kind of weird.
Honestly, this is like one of the times I'm like, NFL, do we need to put a game in Brazil like the day, like, I don't know. Like
on Friday?
Well, I actually read today, which I had no clue was a thing. There's apparently like a law. Like, some government, I mean, I assume our government.
I know what you're talking about.
Like, they can't play, like, this game won't happen for like the next few years because the NFL, like because of an act like in the 60s or something, they can't play a Friday night game until like mid to late December because it impacts high school football.
That's correct. It's like a national law that's been in effect since the 60s. Like,
which I don't understand because now they play the Black Friday. But is that different because it's a Friday in the day?
No, it's because it's after the college football or the high school football season has ended because it's late November. Like at that point, it's only, I believe, like national championships and whatever. There's no like regularly scheduled high school football games in like November 28th or whatever. So they get away with that one. The reason they've got away with this Friday game the last 2 years is because it's played in Brazil. It's not played in the United States. So probably not going to see that going forward unless it's international. I think that's a really good game. I would love to see Harbaugh come in there and like coach Herbert to a victory and like put his stamp on this season and say, hey, this is going to be different this year. I think that's going to be a real good one.
And what, this one's a course on YouTube, I'll be in all this. I was going hard today. Like Kayla asked me, she's like, so I was thinking about cutting like some subscriptions and saving some money. And it's like, which one do I cut? And I was like, well, you need all of them. Like, which sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, yeah, this one's on YouTube. Oh, you want to watch like Christmas football now? Got it on Netflix. So you want to watch? That's a whole other tangent. But
well, for the Niners, at least you get everything in your local market. Like, I feel like I gotta buy all of them because my team isn't on national TV on local TV every week. But that's another conversation for another day. Other marquee games: Detroit at Green Bay. We just talked about them. That's a great one. Houston at the Rams. Stafford starting. Stafford's going to play. Gotta see. I mean, that's one of the most interesting things of week one. Like, if he comes out with zip on the ball looking like the same old Matthew Stafford, I'll feel a hell of a lot better about the Rams than I would if he goes out there and looks a little lethargic or takes a hit and gets up slow. Like, anytime you hear back, you got to get super duper worried in the NFL. Like, even the greats, you know, you get a back injury, that's basically it. So that's a really interesting one to watch. I want to get your take on Baltimore at Buffalo. Because no game in the NFL has been more anticipated in terms of, like, week one, in terms of a rematch of last year's playoffs. And one of the craziest betting, you know, splits that I've seen in a long time. Baltimore was a 3-point underdog basically throughout the whole offseason. They are now a favorite in this game. Like, everybody's lining up to bet Baltimore. What do you see in this game? Because I kind of lean Buffalo.
I like Buffalo at home. I like, but I mean, they're really good teams. It's gonna be a really good, close game. A couple turnovers here or there, either way, it's gonna decide it. It's just really as simple as that. I think it's a pick 'em.
It's an awesome game. I mean, it's such a great way to start the year on Sunday night, because I feel like the Thursday Dallas Philly game is a little bit of a dud, or it has the makings of a dud. This is going to be the big one. Like, I think that's going to be an excellent game. Can't wait for that one. And then Monday night, the Vikings game. So excited for that as well. Let's get to our biggest You Like That picks of the week of all time. We're going to do 7 picks for the first time, because we got to do our 2 NFC North AFC or NFC North NFC West futures, and then our 5 picks for week 1. I like Chicago under 8.5 wins. That's strictly a Caleb Williams fade. Ben Johnson is not God. The defense is mid. I don't think that team wins 9-plus games. I just do not see it. And then Seattle over 8.5. It's actually plus money. You can chop around and find like over 8, but we'll score it at 8.5. I think it might be the best defense in the NFC outside of the Eagles. I think it's a very talented team. I think JSN is a star. I think Darnold's going to sling it a little. I think they're going to go 10-7 and win that win total pretty easily. So that's the You Like That picks of the week for the NFC North and NFC West. Chicago under 8.5 and Seattle over 8.5. As far as the picks of the week for week 1, Joey, tell me what you think of these. I'm just going to rattle them off. Kansas City and the Chargers over 44.5. Something about the overseas games. I think there's a lot of points there. Arizona, New Orleans, the lowest total on the board, 42 points. I feel like Arizona is not the greatest defense, and I feel like they actually do have a pretty talented offense. I thought that was a low total. Miami, everybody's healthy, and they're going to face Danny fucking Dimes. Why are they 2.5-point underdogs? I think Miami will win in that one and put up a ton of points. Tampa Bay, Atlanta, under 48.5. That's the highest total this week, and I want to go under that. Raheem Morris got to shut down Baker to calm things. I think people are kind of frustrated with Morris's defense last year. He spent all that money and all that draft capital on defense. He's got to show that he can stop Baker in week 1. And then the Seahawks, Niners, under 43.5, like we said earlier. All the makings of a slow slugfest out of the gate. Your thoughts on those picks? Anything you would subtract or add?
No, not really. I actually do see. I'm interested to see the Colts Miami came out. Tyreek wasn't voted a team cat. I just said this blow up.
And if my. That's kind of my pick, too, is if Miami doesn't win that one, oh, shit.
I mean, both teams, really, honestly, like, if you're the Colts at home, right? Is it in...
When else are we going to get a win?
Is it in Miami or...
In Indy.
Yeah. So, talk about a coach and a GM and everybody who's like, what are we doing? I mean, it's... Both teams need to win.
Two teams that got to win or the coach is getting fired, no doubt.
Yeah. But I do. I do early in the season. And Miami's will put up some points.
Yeah, I like those picks. So there they are. The You Like That picks of the week for week 1 in the NFL. We got Kansas City and the Chargers over 44.5 in the Sao Paulo game. We got Arizona and New Orleans over 42. We got Miami plus 2.5 at Indy. We have Tampa Bay, Atlanta under 48.5. And we have the Seahawks and Niners under 43.5. Joey, in place of your feels great baby, which you can give one if you have one, we're just going to make our picks for the Super Bowl. Do you have something you want to, a take you want to try out before we get to the big moment?
Yeah, before we do, I mentioned earlier when we did the bum Cowboys Packers. Mm-hmm. My hot take, I'll say it right now, they're not going to be better than this year. I think Dallas is going to win this trade long term.
Wow.
I do. I don't, you can't, and I'm saying that because I think what they do potentially with the picks, with cap space, with him at his current, say, fifth year option plus 2 years of franchise tag, if they weren't even to extend him at the number, I mean, definitely if they extend him at $47 million a year with Dak at 60, and like, they're going nowhere. I mean, they're not in, even with him, they weren't in that group of like, with him. Are they a top 10 team in the league?
Hell no.
Hell no. So why are we going to make us eat? Like, why are we going to cement that if you commit to it? Look, they might not be ever a top 10 with the pit, like, but like,
you got to try
with him. Exactly. With him, I do know that they're not, you know, like, I feel like we were talking about this for some other team, like,
Maybe Pittsburgh?
You could use that theory. I mean, they don't. Yeah. Pittsburgh don't even have a Micah Parsons. Well, I guess TJ Watt, you could say. Like, yeah. Why didn't they trade him? I mean, again, with him, are you sniffing a Super Bowl? Right now.
Not even remotely close, no.
So he's your best asset.
They couldn't extend him. That's just, it was a non-starter. There's no way you can have Dak, Parsons, and CeeDee making that kind of money for
them. Yeah, you want to argue they should have paid him and moved on from Dak? Sure. But all three of them, I know they're a straight ticket to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't blame them at all for moving them. Could they have gotten maybe a bit more if they thought it out better and did it before the draft? Sure. You want to argue all that? No problem. But I do, and again, I think they're going to win it partially because I do. I think Parsons, it has potential to blow up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not anything on or off the field crazy, but just like, like, maybe it's his back. Maybe it's, you know.
He's got to be a double-digit sack guy for the next 4 years for Green Bay, and they got to win some playoff games, you know.
I kept hearing he's a difference maker who, I mean, boy. A lot of teams score a lot of points on Dallas in playoffs.
31st ranked defense last year with him having a career year. Like,
I mean, making my point. 31st defense with him having a career year. Let's sign up for that by paying him almost $50 million. Again, there's other things you can change, but that's my wild take that can be revisited in 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, we'll mark that one down and see how that, I mean, I would bet. In the long haul, we'll probably say it was either a win-win or a lose-lose. I don't think we're going to say, oh, wow, you know, Green Bay absolutely crushed it unless they win a Super Bowl with him, which I don't think they're all that close to. I think they can certainly win a lot of games. I don't know if they can win playoff games.
If I was a Packer, I mean, why don't you just draft one?
Right.
Draft
and develop a pass rusher. I mean, they're desperate for a pass rusher. They've had good run stopping for years.
But didn't Rashawn Gary have like a decent year?
He had a good year, but it's been since Clay Matthews, since they had like a beast off the edge. I think that's part of the reason they paid such a high price. Granted, they probably paid less than they would have if they would have done it in March, but a decent move by the Packers, especially for this year. If he's, you know, apparently he's not that healthy, but if he does play 16, 17 games, he's going to get 10 plus.
It blows for the Packers that, like, the game that Detroit week one, like, it's not like it's against, you know, an AFC opponent. It's like, good deal.
Welcome to the jungle. Yeah, big game week one. We got to end the pod with the biggest story of them all. Who's going to win the Super Bowl? I'm going to give my final four and my Super Bowl matchup. You give your final four and your Super Bowl matchup, and then we'll give our winners, and then we'll get out of Dodge. Final four for me: Eagles win the NFC over the Vikings. The 1 seed Eagles over the 2 seed Vikings. JJ McCarthy makes it as far as anybody has in their first year. Jaden Daniels did it last year. A few guys have done it in the past. Ben Roethlisberger. I think the world of the Vikings. I think we're going to make it close. I think we're going to get to the NFC Championship, and then in the AFC. The Chiefs have to make it. They've made it to the AFC Championship, what, 7 or 8 straight years? But I think the Ravens finally get over the hump. I think the Ravens got an easier schedule. I think this game will be at home. And I think it'll be a case where they'll probably coach a little bit better than they did in the 2023 AFC Championship game. So give me the Ravens and the Eagles in the Super Bowl. Joey, what about you?
I got Buffalo over Baltimore. Just really simply because if not now, when?
Mm-hmm.
For Buffalo mostly. I think they're closer to the end than, which is crazy when you have Josh Allen and, you know, still under contract and still at a prime of his career. But
I think Baltimore, like, if they don't win it this year, like, it kind of is going to get to the point, if not now, when.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got Philly over Detroit. I still am, like I said, pretty high on Detroit. I think Philadelphia, it's, I don't know the odds, but, I mean, for them to reach the Super Bowl, it's got to be, like, darn near a pick, like, flat.
Well, I believe it's, like, yeah, like, plus 170 or something like
that. I mean, they're so, to me, really, like, so far and above anyone else. But then I got them losing to Buffalo in the Super Bowl. I got Buffalo winning the Super Bowl or Phillies.
The first Super Bowl title.
That, to me, is mostly like, you know, I don't know.
It's Allen's time.
It's just, it time. Admittedly, does any part of me believe Buffalo is better than Philly? No. I think they're better quarterback. But other than that.
I think everybody's also just banking on Saquon just having another elite year. That rule of 370, where it's like, if you have more than 370 touches in a year, you basically miss at least half the season the following year, or your production drops off to the point where you get benched. That's what's happened almost every time you look at recent guys that did it. I mean, other than Derrick Henry, who just keeps chugging along. I mean, Arian Foster's career was basically over after he did it. It happened to a lot of guys back in the 2000s, Priest Holmes, Larry Johnson, etc. Saquon Barkley had almost 500 touches if you include the playoffs last year, which is like third all time. I think he'll drop off enough to where he's not as effective in the playoffs. I got the Ravens winning the Super Bowl over the Eagles. I think it's Lamar's time. He was the best player in the NFL last year, 41 touchdowns, 4 picks, ran for almost 1,000 yards. I think he probably should have won MVP last year, even though maybe visually Allen was better. It's Lamar's time. If not now, when? Same thing you said with Buffalo. Like, somebody other than Mahomes has to come out of the AFC.
Which is crazy because, I mean, they're going to be tough to beat again.
You wouldn't bet against it. I just want to see someone other than KC in the Super Bowl.
It doesn't seem like this, but it'd be the fourth in a row.
It's insane. I don't know if that's ever been done. Oh, Buffalo, obviously, and they lost all of them, but. There it is, our picks for the Super Bowl. Joey's got Buffalo over Philly. I got the Ravens over Philly. This is the longest pod maybe in our history, an hour and a half, but we did cover everything we needed to go over. Week one, bum of the week, picks of the week, NFC West preview, NFC North preview. We got football games, folks, and we got another pod coming to you at some point next week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We're done with our preview series. We're done with the offseason. The NFL's back. We're thrilled to be back, and thanks again for listening.